When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Hot Stove Society Show on Cairo Radio. We're here coming to you from the Hot Stove Kitchens, second floor of the beautiful Hotel Andra in downtown Seattle. If you don't know where we are, come do a staycation sometime. Hang out with us.
It's a beautiful part of the world.
The hotel is stunning, and we're fun, and we have delicious restaurants in the neighborhood.
And you're one block, you're two
you're
blocks
listening
from the
to us on Cairo, market. Of course, and thanks for tuning in. We record the show on Thursday mornings from 9 to 11 right here in our kitchens, and we invite you to join us. Go to hotstovesociety.com, buy a ticket. You get breakfast and coffee. A lot of times, although it looks like the market folks didn't do it today, a lot of times our guests bring treats for our listeners and for our in-house guests.
Somebody didn't get the
but
memo.
It looks like the chef from La Coin just...
I'm here to eat.
Oh, I see how it is. If you want to watch us, you can go to YouTube by tuning into the Tom Douglas & Co. channel. And if you can't make the radio show, we have classes right here at the Hot Stove. July 21st is Drink Like a Venetian with Bridget and Julie. And the 29th is Edible Art Colorful Pasta with our own Sean McFadden, our technical director and artist collaborator, Lars LaDuc. We're sad to say today is Pamela's last day of producing the show. Although, my guess is she loves us so much that when she gets used to her new job, she'll come back and do a guest appearance.
Yes, please.
Yes, will you do it? Okay.
Yeah.
And you've already started. You're the new executive director of the Pike Place Senior Center and Food Bank.
Yes.
Yes.
Quite an operation.
This has been, part of your dream after leaving us was to do something where you could give back to our community. And your opportunity has arisen. We're very proud of you.
Thank you.
Matter of fact, we're going to talk to the philanthropy director today from the Market Foundation and tell them how angry we are that they have stolen you from our grasp. Joshua Delgado is with her here today. He's the chef of La Coin, here to entice us to attend the Sunset Supper in the Pike Place Market. I think we decided yesterday what we're cooking at our booth.
What are you going to bring, Tom?
We're going to do we have a new hot link going on at Etta's down in the market. So we're going to do a pork and pepper jacks hot link. So right
Wonderful.
On the charcoal grill, right down there on the cobblestones of the market. It's my That's favorite right. charitable event that we do from a cooking perspective every year because there's something magical,
live
chef.
Fire.
You know,
live
not
fire
just one. Live fire, but on the street of the Pike Place
sure.
Market. There's so much history in those bricks that I feel like it just oozes out during Sunset Supper.
It would be
supper.
Like being in the Marais in Paris and cooking away. And
it's just like that.
It's just like that.
Isn't it?
That's
very
the
sweet.
Same. Very sweet.
Well, the Marais up kind of that's on the hill, right?
No, it's down. It's down.
Oh, it's down from the hill. What is the one up on the hill?
What's Montmartre?
Montmartre. That's right.
Montmartre would be quite classic. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're sad to see Pam go. Sick of crying about it. For our produce segment today, we're going to talk to some folks.
The pain was very slow, very short.
A grow for Charlie's Produce. Stimmitz zooms in from Wapato, Sherry Stimmitz from Wapato to talk stone fruits. Looking forward to that. Pamela did her best expression of a peach on our show sheet today. So very, very nice, crafty artwork.
Thank you.
You're not going to have time for that anymore.
No, no more art.
A sweet and savory peach party. Veggie Palooza. Oh, is this how we go out?
That's how we go out.
This is how we go out. We're going to talk how to cook vegetables of all sorts on your charcoal grill. Why not?
I did a whole bunch yesterday, so yes.
Oh, good timing.
You have some ideas for
Fresh
it.
In memory.
An ode to salad niçoise. My guess is that's your taste of the week because that's what you had up on Whidbey. They're not on Whidbey. What are they?
Hood Canal.
Hood Canal.
Point, no point.
Yeah. And you had a beautiful salad niçoise, and it never gets old. I think a salad niçoise
No,
is
I think it's one of my favorite salads.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's so easy to make, and it's so delicious, and so perfect.
And you want to do substitutions that are local, like instead of the canned tuna or something, but sometimes you just need to leave
the classic.
The classic. And of course, we're going to finish the show. It's Pam's last effort. You did do the clues today. Yes?
It's a veggie and fruit themed trivia.
There's another shocker. Pam's last effort at
who's the next director
thought.
So we have meat.
Yeah. Food for Thought Tasty Trivia brought to you by Rub With Love Spice Rubs. I was trying to think of my favorite segment that Pam has produced in the time. How long have you been our producer? For a year and
a half?
Year and a half?
Almost 2 years, yeah.
It's a record. Nobody's lasted that long before.
Now I know why.
You must be really...
I have fortitude.
You need some psychological help. But I can't think of a particular segment because I think she's brought so much to our show over the year and a half. One of the things that Tina, way back when we first started the show, Tina was always intent on bringing a less chefy element to the show. Because right. Sometimes you and I go off into a world that is not...
Nobody understands.
Well, it's just it's hard for the home cook to kind of grasp right. sometimes. And Pam is a fabulous home cook, and she was always brought that kind of energy to our show, where it balances out some of the idle chefiness that we have. And so we appreciate.
I've learned a lot from you too.
Have you? What have you learned? Tell us one thing.
Hot pans.
What do you mean? You started things in a cold pan?
Hot pans.
Yeah,
that's a song.
It should be.
You would just put like a steak in a cold pan?
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay,
I am so glad we were here for you.
Did you actually turn the gas on?
and thoroughly cooking my onions. You know, because I was always in a hurry.
Uh-huh.
And not that I always can take them to a caramelized state, but understanding how the structure of the onion changes as you cook it. And there's a difference between a burnt one and a well-cooked one.
Yeah, there's right. a difference between burnt and caramelized, yeah.
I understand, but there's also not really a problem with burnt. When you look at like on a really hot charcoal sear where you actually do burn the edges, it's just a different... type of onion.
I think there is good burn and bad burn. In general, it's hard to burn an onion.
Chef, do you have any particular memories of Pamela producing our show over the last year?
I mean, it's kind of like you. I can't really pinpoint just one thing, but I think the overall experience has been tremendous.
Thank you.
And we're definitely going to miss you. Your creativity is awesome.
I won't. She lives right down the street from me. I'm going to see her all the time.
I mean, as a director...
You live across the country.
As a director of the show, sure. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to be a hard shoes to fill. We're going to miss you, honey.
We're trying out, you know, some new directors. I'm going to take on the role of producing the show for the next couple of weeks. But we have...
Come on, that's worth a round of applause. I love that one. That was hilarious.
What was that guffaw for?
She's definitely... Hey, Tom, I think she's definitely leaving the way she laughed.
Yeah. Coming up, we're getting psyched for Sunset Supper. You're listening to us here on the Hot Stove Society radio show on Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM.
One bad apple don't spoil the whole bunch, girl.
Oh, give it one more try.
Sing for your supper and you'll get breakfast. Songbirds always eat. If their song is sweet.
Sunset Supper is coming up right here on the Hot Stove Society show. Patricia Gray is here, Director of Community Relations for the Market Foundation. And Chef Joshua Delgado from La Coin Restaurant over there. I would say that's Fremont, right? It's kind of on the way up to Woodland Park.
Upper Fremont.
When I was there first years ago, it was called the Buckaroo Tavern. When I lived on 39th and Bowdoin, which is right down behind where your restaurant is.
Oh, yeah.
And you've seen me there. I love that little spot. If you would just put in a TV, I'd be very happy. I'd be there much more often.
Don't, Josh.
Well, we had a long debate about that. And
did you?
Didn't seem
too long because there's never been one there.
Well, I guess what I should say is it was a long discussion but a short decision.
I stand by your choice.
Yeah, I. You know what? It's for us, it's a... You know, you're in the restaurant when you're in the restaurant.
Friday, August 18th, the Pike Place Market Foundation is bringing together 100 of the region's best restaurants, wineries, breweries, and distilleries for Sunset Supper at the Pike Place Market. One of my favorite charitable event of the year when I'm cooking is the Sunset Supper because You live on those cobblestones, and we actually sometimes get a booth right down near our restaurants. And with the charcoal grill going this year and our sausages, we're so excited to be part of this event. Patricia Gray, tell us about what's going to be happening, the music that's playing. It's an annual hoopla.
Yeah, it's the event of the year. I believe this is the 27th annual Sunset
wow.
Supper.
We've been in all 27 of them.
Have I been to all 27?
No, I have.
You have been to all 27. Yeah. Tom, thank you very much.
Yeah, my vote.
Nice.
Wouldn't miss it.
You know, it's chefs like you and Thierry who come back year after year and make this event really spectacular. It's the one night of the year that we get to turn the market over from its daytime shopping market and invite in over 100 of our region's best chefs, wineries, breweries, and distilleries to put on a fabulous party. All the proceeds go right back into the market community to support services like the Pike Market Senior Center and Food Bank, as well as a preschool, a medical clinic, support for workers. We've got a small business fund now since the pandemic. Just a whole host of services that support about 20,000 people who live, work, and access the services at Pike Place Market.
Yeah, people don't realize how big of a... It's like a mini city. I mean, 20,000 people is 10 times what's in my hometown.
Right.
That's a big town.
Yes. And that is the community, you know, who relies on these services in the market for support.
And that's just those people. I mean,
just those people.
The market, I don't think people realize, is a neighborhood just like Fremont or just like Greenwood or anybody's. It's an actual neighborhood with people that need those kind of services, food banks and senior centers, and really rich people that don't need anything. That just, have condos. And
I mean, we have billionaires, right, to seniors living on Social Security above the storefronts,
you know,
who are all part of the place, and they belong there. We all belong at Pike Place Market. We also welcome people from all over the world, you know, who travel to see Pike Place Market.
Right. If you just watched the All-Star game this last week, you'll see a lot of Pike Place Market going on at the All-Star game. And it's because it's the heart and soul of our city. So
absolutely.
Well, Tom, did you hear they actually rolled out the red carpet down those cobblestones?
Yes, I saw that.
And I thought that was a shame, honestly, only because the cobblestones are what's awesome about it. And then they covered them up with plastic carpet.
It looked good, though.
Oh, it was cheery.
Yeah, it's the only way those stilettos would make it down the cobblestones.
Yeah.
I mean, the fashion was popping.
Yeah,
that was really...
There was a gold lamé dress that I was lusting after on one of the wives. It was really cool.
It's like, this is not Seattle, but this is amazing for this one moment.
Yeah, for this one moment in time. Staying on the market for one thing, and I'm just going to put my vote in right now. Do not let them take the cars out of the Pike Place Market. I've been here longer than you. I was born. I was in the market before you were born. But it is part of the energy of the market. So if it comes down to a vote, got nothing to do with our segment, but if it does come down to a vote, I'm voting for keeping the market full of cars and playing dodgeball with the citizens of the visitors.
We know, I mean, there's many...
You're going to get some email.
Yeah.
There's many different voices, right, in this conversation. And I think right now we're hearing from the public's perspective, but you're right, Tom, they're not hearing what are the impacts on merchants and farmers and the folks who live in the market, the people who access the services in the market. So doing a deep community-wide survey of the people most impacted by the use of that street, I think, is a great move.
Okay, Chef, let's get into the real meat of the subject. From Le Coin.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
Le Coin.
Le Coin. Is that true, Chef?
That's how we opened up, but we kind of had to go full American.
Not a chance that's going to go.
It was like when I opened Luc, I thought, Luc, L-U-C, three letters, my dad, his name is Luc. I'm like, there's no way they're going to change that. The first week was like, luck. I was like, oh, my God, how did they do that?
Yeah.
Joshua Delgado from Le Coin is here from that delicious little restaurant over in Fremont. Tell us about what you're doing, why you're doing it, and what you're making, and all that sort of goodness.
I think for myself as well as my business partner, Jordan, who's behind us, we have such a deep appreciation for the market. It's just a super cool event, you know, like you were saying, being on the cobblestone, you know, the sun's going to set over the buildings and it's really just a gorgeous setting. But you know, just being for me personally, like being a kid, we would go down there and go to Piroshki and go to Sur La Table and just walk the aisles and just be down there. It was, you know, definitely sparked a culinary love from a very young age. And so being able to go down there with our own restaurant and participate in an event like that, not only are there such wonderful services and benefits from it, but just from a standpoint of enjoying ourselves and getting outside the four walls of our restaurant, it's a great place to be. And then bringing our staff down there, they get a kick out of it. And it's just fun to interact with all the guests and folks you've never met. And, of course, it's great for business.
I think true Seattle Light really want to support the market, I think.
Oh, absolutely.
Meaning that, you know, it's just, like we always say, it's the soul of the city for us.
Yeah.
And for me, it's one of the reasons I stayed in Seattle, came from L.A., went to the Pike Place Market the first day, and I was like, okay, I'm moving here.
Yeah.
This is the chef paradise. I mean, who doesn't want to have a market to walk by, shop, and go back to the restaurant and cook? I mean, that's like a dream.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Joshua, what are you going to make? Do you know yet?
I don't. I'm kind of the type of person who needs the pressure of the deadline to
which
really.
Which is this week,
in.
You know, dude.
It's tomorrow. Yeah,
week.
It's actually tomorrow. Yeah. You know, so. No.
My God,
so
what, you love pressure.
I know. It's just, you know, it's how I've always operated. You know, it keeps me in line. But I what
keeps
I will
people
say,
like Patricia Gray.
Yeah.
Well, you get 1,200.
I will say I'm very rarely late with it, but I do bring it down to the wire. Uh-huh.
You know. 1,200 portion to make.
I know. Well, and that's part of the, you know, I will say, and this isn't a cop out at all, but that's kind of like who we are and how we cook is like we're gonna see what we can get, you know, what we feel like cooking.
Possible, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we'll, of course, like logistics will play a role for 1,200 portions. And so we'll make something super delicious. I'm certain of it.
All right, Patricia, tell us again, how do people get tickets? When is the event? All that sort of goodness.
Yeah, so the event is Friday, August 18th. It's celebrating the 117th anniversary of Pike Place Market. Tickets are on sale at sunsetsupper.org. As of yesterday, we only had about 60 general admission tickets left. That's out of 1,700 tickets.
Mm-hmm.
So this Saturday might be your last chance to scoop up a couple tickets and join us at Sunset Supper.
And there's always plenty of food. I mean, there's 100 restaurants there. There's always
plenty.
Yeah,
it's all you can eat, all you can drink, live music, entertainment throughout the market. Great sunset, great party.
Sounds
and
like
great
fun.
Support.
Pamela, are you going to come join us this year?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. You better, because we're supporting your
okay.
doings.
Put me on the grill.
Sherry Steinmetz is of Lateral Roots Farm in Wapato is going to join us in the next segment. Cultivating Roots on Cairo Radio. It's the Hot Stove Society Show, 97.3 FM.
Understand, I'm gonna love you till the very end. Peaches, 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 peaches.
All right, we're back in the hot stove kitchen on Cairo Radio. Everyone's eating, so they're not clapping. What the heck's going on around here? We're having a good old time. Remember, if you do buy a ticket, you get a nice, delicious, hot breakfast. Typically, it's a Spanish tortilla, beautiful ruby chard, some delicious chorizo, Spanish-style chorizo, and some toast. So good. Blueberry muffin.
Made by Chef Annie.
So come on down sometime and check us out. Our next segment is all about cultivating fresh, a segment that we're starting with partners Charlie's Produce. And ourselves, focusing on Eastern Washington farms, Western Washington, just fresh produce in general, all sorts.
And this time of year, there is a lot of it.
There's a lot of it. Man, the cherries are so awesome this year. But we're going to talk with Cherie Steinmetz from Lateral Roots Farm. She's a grower that sells to Charlie's. And she's joined us on Zoom here this morning on Cairo. So welcome, Cherie.
Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Tell us about your farm, and you're in Wapato, right?
Yep, our farm's in the Wapato area, and Lateral Roots Farm is the name. And we are actually fairly new. We purchased this existing farm 5 years ago, so we're only about 5 years old. The previous owner was second, maybe even third generation at this farm, and has started a really, really deep relationship with Charlie's Produce that we have been able to continue after purchasing this farm.
Is the most famous thing you guys grow at your farm Pence peaches by chance?
It is. It is. We that was the previous owner I was talking about, the Pence family. And they have the famous Pence peach over there in the Seattle area that you guys know the name of. And so when we purchased the farm, the Pence family was actually family friends of ours. So we grew up, you know, coming and visiting them and their farm. And when they were ready to retire, they reached out to my dad and had asked if we'd be interested in purchasing the farm. And all of me and my siblings said, of course, let's do it. And the Pence family was very kind, let us continue with trademarking Pence peaches and that verbiage as we continue our relationship with Charlie's Produce.
What did you discover that was the worst part of farming? Because if you've never farmed before and you say, oh, yeah, let's get into farming, that's what people in the city do. They just go, oh, that sounds like a lot of fun, and without any idea of what how hard farming is. So I mean, what's the worst discovery you had of that?
The good thing is we all grew up around farming. So my dad is fourth-generation hop farmer here in the Lower Valley area. So we grew up on the farm. We grew up having to work at a young age and kind of knew what it was all about. So it wasn't anything new that way, but this is our first farm that we've owned. And so that has brought, of course, challenges. Farming isn't easy. There's a ton of things that go into it. The biggest thing that we encountered right away is, you know, weather has a huge impact on agriculture. And we've had some interesting weather patterns these past few years that have made what we think is going to happen not reality. So our very, very first year we were farming, we lost our whole apricot crop in a frost, in an early or a late frost season. Last year we lost about half of our cherry crop in the frost season. So those are our challenges that we always have, these, you know, these budgets. This is how much we're going to pick, this is what we're going to sell, this is our budget. You know, just like that, you know, half of your crop can be gone. So those are things that we've had to really come to reality with and plan for and realize that we don't get to save everything. So,
wow.
Last week we had your Tomcat. Well, Tom and Terry did. I didn't. So tell me what that is. That sounds very exciting.
That's just a variety of apricots that we have here. And that's the only variety we have. A very, very delicious apricot, very juicy, sweet, beautiful, kind of really an unblemished, no blush to it, just a really true apricot color. And that was part of the farm when we purchased it. So I believe that along with the Pence peaches, there was a lot of work that the Pence family had done in marketing these Tomcats with Charlie's Produce.
And did you say, Cherie, what the exact cross is on those?
You know, no, and I don't know that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
That's just like, if, you know, we're familiar with Plucots, which is a plum apricot cross.
Plucots, right. Yeah.
But I'm not exactly sure what a Tomcat.
Plucot. A Tomcat is just an apricot. It's not a mix with anything else. Like a Plucot is a plum apricot. Aprium is an apricot and a plum. Mm-hmm. But the Tomcat is just a true apricot.
Yeah, they just gave it the name Tom, probably from somebody, right?
Tom Douglas.
Yeah, it's just a variety name. It's just a variety. Probably Tom was the guy that, you know, bred that apricot.
Cherie, tell us a little bit about the economics of working a farm these days. It seems to me that, you know, you got a big wholesaler like Charlie's, but when you sell to a wholesaler, you have to sell at a certain price point so that he can turn around and sell to different grocery stores and still make a profit. Then you've got, I would imagine, a little bit of local distribution or other avenues of distribution. What's the economics look like in the mix of how you sell your crops? Like, is it percentage-wise you do 50% wholesale and then the rest of different avenues? Can you share that with
us? Yeah, it is probably, I would say, working with Charlie's wholesale, probably 75% of our crop is wholesale. And then we are unique here in the fact that all of the fruit that we grow, we harvest it and pack it in the field. So we're tree ripening our fruit. So with that comes a lot of ripe fruit that we can't ultimately put in a box and ship to Charlie's. So we have what we would call like a number two box. That's just riper or uglier fruit. And so we have a whole network of local distributors, whether it's farmers markets or other small wholesalers that come and will purchase that product as well straight from the farm. So all the fruit we sell is harvested, picked, packed on site and sold direct to the consumer, or well, to Charlie's, the wholesaler.
And sometimes it's hard for people to understand that you have to have these different avenues to make a whole. Not unlike having an orchard of peaches and an orchard of cherries and an orchard of apples, so that if one crop goes south on you, you have something else to back it up.
Yeah, that's really important when you're setting up your farm and the flow, and, you know, it goes all the way through to your labor. You know, how consistent can you keep your labor working throughout the summer? So this farm here, we have, we start with cherries. Cherries flow into apricots. We have about a week break between apricots, and then we start nectarines and peaches next week. Our peaches will go from next week till consistently through all the varieties till about the end of September. And we'll also have plums that come in there in late August as well. So when we start harvesting our cherries, we are in harvest and keeping our labor flowing all summer long, which also keeps your customers happy. You're going from one product to the next. It's easy to sell apricots when you also have peaches coming in, so it's kind of a nice flow. And again, yeah, if you lose your whole cherry crop, you have apricots to back it up, or if you lose your whole apricot crop, you're busy with cherries. So just trying to manage that flow from the economic standpoint all the way through, like I said, to keeping your labor happy and keeping them around, and having someone to actually harvest your fruit.
Exactly. That's so important.
That's important.
I was out yesterday at our farm, which is about 40 miles southeast of you in Prosser, and our apricots are about a week away. They are looking so nice.
That's exciting. Yeah, it's this time of year is just beautiful in the valley. We grew up here. We love it. You grow up in ag. I'll be honest, all of us siblings, we grew up working in agriculture. We said we were going to, you know, go to college and get an education and move away and never come back and do agriculture. We are all in it. And it's because it's, you know, you realize you actually do have a passion for it. It's an amazing industry to be a part of, especially in the over here we're at in the eastern Washington. We call it the lower Yakima Valley. You know, everything is growing here. You know, everything is coming up. It's just a wonderful time of year here.
Yeah, it is. If you want to try some of Cherie Steinmetz's products from Lateral Roots Farm, Charlie's distributes to Met Markets, Hagen's, Frank's in the Pike Place Market, Thriftways, Wajamaya, King's Market, Friday Harbor, amongst other places. So go out there and check out Lateral Roots Farms. Thank you, Cherie, for joining us this
morning. Thank you, Cherie.
Yes, thank you guys for having me.
Thank you. Right. See you later.
One of our favorite ways to devour peaches. You're coming back with that on Cairo Radio is 97.3 FM. Start, but we're catching up here. It's peach perfection time, sweet and savory. Pam, what was your intention here? Other than, you know, I like to talk about the time that I walk up to the peach tree in the garden, 90 degrees out, you pull a peach and it just drips down your arm.
I know.
You don't get peach perfection like that anyplace else.
No,
but once you have, you're in trouble.
Yeah, it's hard to go back.
You're not in trouble, but you do recognize, like, Wow, this is what it can be. And, of course, I love peaches in all sorts of ways. I even like my mom's spice peaches.
Well, that's what we want to talk about.
What's a spice peach?
Canned peaches with
cinnamon.
Cinnamon.
That's called a spice peach?
She always served it with her turkey, yeah. Pickled beets and spice peaches.
Pickled beets?
Don't be so judgmental, Chef.
I'm not judgmental. I'm listening. Look at you. I'm not judgmental.
Look at my mom.
I've had canned peaches.
My poor
canned
mom died a year ago. She gave me that stove.
Canned peaches can be good.
Look at you looking down on her.
I was not. God, you're so judgmental. I was not.
So tell us about your inspiration for peaches.
Well, because we were talking to Cherie, and it's peach season. Coincidentally, the news has been talking about the comeback of cottage cheese, which I love.
Mm-hmm.
Many people don't, but the classic.
Who would that be?
I was growing up was peaches, cottage cheese, black pepper.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of the big treat.
Wow, that's pretty radical for a family like the type of food that you grew up with.
I know.
Fresh peaches and black pepper?
Yeah.
Wow.
My grandma had some peaches.
Huh. So that's very cool.
But then I've also been hankering after a peach pie.
Mm-hmm.
Jackie makes it with black pepper. There's something
You
do.
Yeah.
There's something about sweetness and the spice with
peach
black pepper.
Yeah, peach and pepper. Cracked pepper is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's a great combination. It's one of those that came out and everybody was like, what? And then you try it and you go, ah. That's going to stay.
Chef, I think I invented it.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah.
Me too. I think I
invented
it too.
Also? Okay.
That's good.
Okay. So here's the thing about peach pie, that just to clarify for me, I hate it when you make a peach pie, and like Jackie and I argue about this. Jackie's my wife, by the way. She likes to plan the pie so that it's about ready when it's time for dessert. I like to bake the pie that afternoon and let it set and be ready for dessert.
I'm with you. Yeah.
Because if it cut it when it's hot.
Yeah, I'm a little bit settled in too.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Now, are you tapioca starch? Are you arrowroot? Or are you cornstarch? Or are you flour?
I don't bake.
Well.
I would go with arrowroot.
Arrowroot.
I like arrowroot. You're not in.
She's not. I'm not even listening to her right now.
I'm not.
I don't bake.
I don't bake. I buy it.
So why arrowroot?
When you buy it.
What do you like about arrowroot? Because what I don't like about cornstarch is it gets too glossy and too, looks like it's from Denny's.
Well, I think arrowroot cooks better and faster, mm-hmm. so it doesn't give that, for me, when
you say faster, that's important. Because you don't cook your peaches so
correct.
Much. Yeah.
And also, it does not give that flavor of like, you know, that uncooked baked flour. Mm-hmm. That's something I really do not like in pastries.
Uh-huh.
And you find it quite often. We've talked about this many times on the baked product and everything. It's the same thing when you're using a starch to be a binding agent. It has to be cooked all the way. Otherwise, you taste that bitterness from the flour or the thickening agent. And to me, it's not a flavor I like. So I like when it cooks all the way. And arrowroot seems to be, for me, seems to be the best out of all those thickening agents.
And if somebody's reading a recipe where it calls for cornstarch or for tapioca starch or whatever, is the arrowroot a one-to-one substitute? Do you know?
I would have to double-check that. I don't remember.
I'm sure we can find that out online or something.
Sure you can find that as a translation.
What about, let's take peaches in a savory direction. So, other than shallots and thyme, what are you going to add to them?
Well, I love pickling peaches.
Do you?
Yeah, but not in a very light pickling. So you can add it to salad. So, for example, grilled leftover grilled chicken. You know, when I grill chicken, I don't just grill chicken for the meal. I grill chicken for the next few meals because I love having grilled chicken in my fridge and mm-hmm. make a salad or whatever, especially this time of year. It's so much easier to open the fridge and take some grilled chicken and crumble it into a salad than it is to having to turn on the grill again and grill some more chicken.
Mm-hmm.
Peaches come to mind when you're making a grilled chicken salad, especially one that's got a nice spice on it, you know, rub with love kind of spice on it. It's really nice to have a light pickled peach to add to that salad because it creates that, you know, that thing that you always look for, kind of umami idea where you have the sweet on one side and the sour, mm-hmm. and then you have the spice on the other side. So the two together with maybe some toasted almond, a nice little rice vinegar added to that, or the brine from the peaches added to that. And then you make that, it toss that into a beautiful salad with fresh herbs, tarragon, basil this time of year. Pick that from the garden, add that to the salad and put that on top of mixed green or just regular lettuces, good lettuces from the garden as well. And you have this wonderful salad, some grilled bread.
Well, that's where I was going to head when Pam asked, how would you use peaches? For me, on a charcoal grill, because it doesn't work as well on a gas grill. You don't get the flavor. But right. when you hard char a bread on a charcoal grill, it picks up the smoky flavor mm-hmm. very quickly. And then I like taking ricotta and whipping it. Like yeah. you can do it right in your Cuisinart. You can do it however.
Better substitution to cottage cheese, I say.
Much, much better. And so I whip the ricotta up real light. Then I put that on my charred bread, fresh cracked black pepper. Fresh sliced peaches, any sort of little herb like anise hyssop or tarragon or any
and
sort of
a good extra virgin olive oil.
Just a drizzle right over top. And some people like to put honey on, but to me, with peaches are so sweet.
Oh, yeah, no.
You don't need to add the honey. A little chopped toasted pistachio or hazelnut.
Pecans.
Pecans
and peaches.
Really?
Well, that's because you're a Georgia girl.
I think toasted almond is also a good match. I mean, to me, as a child, the memory of peaches is peach melba, which is half peaches. You take the peaches, you cut them in half, you blanch them you poach them in a syrup, light syrup, put them upside down, put a towel on it so they're submerged, and then you skin them out. And you put that, and once it's cooled off, you take them out of the juice. And once it's cooled off, you put that on top of vanilla ice cream with raspberry coulis and toasted almond
please.
And a big whipped cream on top. Now, that's a dessert.
I never quite understood the whipped cream on ice cream.
Me neither, but you can ask my wife. She put whipped cream on everything.
Really?
Luscious.
Oh, she's like, vanilla ice cream and whipped cream, best thing in the world.
And if you were going to make a peach salsa, what kind of lifespan would that have in your refrigerator?
4 or 5 days.
Yeah, yeah. I would say at least 4 or 5 days.
My favorite peach salsa I ever made was a peach sambal. So kind of an Indonesian sambal with the hot chili paste and the sweet peaches, a little
yes.
combination, like on roasted duck or yeah. roasted chicken or something like that.
Yeah.
So look up any sort of sambal recipe and then just add peaches to it. So it's a good combination. So delicious. You made me want some peaches.
I know it.
I'm going to move to the country. And then, you know what I'm going to do then? I'm going to eat me a lot of peaches.
Oh, yes.
Coming Make up in our song. Second hour at the height of the produce and grilling season, we combine two on an ode to salad niçoise. And, of course, we play Rub With Love, Food for Thought, Tasty Trivia. On Cairo Radio, it's the Hot Stove Society Show, 97.3 FM.
I'm moving to the country. I'm going to eat me a lot of peaches. I'm moving to the country. I'm going to eat a lot of peaches.
Finally made up my mind, so here I am just a grilling and chilling. My favorite kind of town, killing. No running, just sunning and getting my fair share of fun.
All right, here we go. Hour number two on Cairo Hot Stove Society. Beautiful hotel, Andrea. Come do a staycation with us. We'd love to have you. As a matter of fact, in honor of Pam's last day.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. We're going to give her a phone number, and you can call her and tell her how great she is.
Pam is offering the room in the basement of her house for a staycation. And she is going to cook you a dinner with a whole lot of peaches. And
bake you a cake she never done before.
What do people have to do to win this prize?
400 hours of gardening.
There you go. So it is Pam's last day. We've been enjoying some memories and enjoying the idea that she's going off to a job that she has dreamed about, helping our fellow citizens down there in the Pike Place Market at the Senior Center and Food Bank. If you want to make Pam super happy on her last day, send a donation. In the name of the Hot Stove Radio Show, that we appreciated her last year and a half as our producer, and send a donation. Well, you can send it to me personally. No, send a donation to the Senior Center or to the Food Bank, and say thanks, Pam. Thanks for a year and a half of deliciousness on the Hot Stove Society Radio Show.
Thank you.
In honor of Pam, we're going to do two segments on grilling vegetables. this summer, because I think it's people have this idea that you can only do kind of long, flat things like an eggplant or a mushroom or something on the charcoal grill. And there's so much more that can be done. So I'm going to lead off with an area that Pam didn't really take in. Well, maybe
I have one thing I want to talk about is at one time during those two segments is grilled onion, because I had a revelation last night, which I couldn't believe I didn't have a revelation of
that before. Well, let's just start right there. Go for it.
So, you know, when I grill, like yesterday...
I don't know when you grill.
I grilled some chicken yesterday, but when I grill, I always, you know, Kathy and I, we always get a bunch of vegetable, because I love grilled vegetable as well. We love grilled vegetable. Usually it's a combination of onions, and it starts with onion always, so half onion cut horizontally, and just a little bit of rub on it, a little bit of olive oil, and then I grill my onion that way. But the problem with grilling onion is when they're half like this, is when you try to flip them, they always come apart, especially once they start get cooking because they get shrinking in size.
Put a skewer through them.
The ring. That was my revelation. I was like, I can't believe I never thought of this before. Put skewer through it. I was like, duh. So I thought, I was like, I need to say this on the radio so people can save their onion rings instead of going through the grill.
World famous chef admits he just learned about
skewering. It's like, it was a dumb moment where I was like, I felt like I was going to hit my head against the concrete.
So to me, there's two ways when you grill onions on the charcoal grill. You can get it to that, you know, when you set your fire up to do direct heat.
Correct.
Searing a steak, like as hot as you can get your grill heat. To me, you can do the same with an onion.
Correct.
And blacken the outside rings of the onion, which leaves the center ring still a little bit al dente.
Right.
And you pull it, and that's an onion that has a different kind of texture, right? It's super nice.
Correct.
And lovely compared to, say, a browned onion, which is really soft and mushy all the way through.
Correct.
So there's lots of different ways to handle the onion along with its texture.
Well, one thing I do is I char, like you say, I char first. And I char not to burn, I char to give it a nice char. Uh-huh. And then I flip it and I put it on the side of my grill. So it keeps cooking. I want it to be still have a little give on the inside, but I don't want it to be mush. That's the stage I'm looking for. So I keep cooking it a little bit longer, then I remove it.
That's interesting because you can't temp it like you... But right. That, I think, is my most important takeaway from my time with you guys is... temping my proteins.
Yeah.
But what about, how are you going to test that?
My favorite part about that, you've been our producer for a year and a half. I've been telling you that for 45 years. And I'm glad that it finally sunk in the last year before your seventh decade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for that. So, how do you know?
Well, it's
it's because you finally bought me one of the fancy.
It's the same as everything else. It's a little bit of practice. I mean, I've had many soft onions that were. I've had many onions that were softer than I wanted them, and I've had a few onions that were under, but you start by knowing, you know, the texture, and you know when to pull. And if you pull too early, the good thing is you can plastic wrap the dish, and it will keep, the heat will keep cooking the onion, and it will be perfect by the time you get it to the table.
Mm. So one of the things I don't think people have at home enough is a basket to put on their grill,
right?
So that you can do smaller pieces, or... for me, it's a great way to do a quick wilted escarole.
Yeah.
Those are the kind of things that can happen on the grill to me that add a ton of flavor, but you're not over, it's not like you're stewing the escarole or like you would collard greens or something. No, you're just doing over a really intense fire, just that, you know, hot sear. But the basket is really helpful with a pair of tongs. You just toss it around in your basket. It doesn't fall through your grate or anything. But I do think there's some tools that we're missing at home to make our grills more versatile.
I have two tools for my grill. One is those baskets for vegetables, small pieces, or mushroom, or things like this. It's much easier for mushroom. And then the other one is a plancha that I put on my grill. It fits exactly on my 22-inch Weber, a plancha, and I love using that plancha for, like if I'm doing something that's more like flat, like a little
cake.
Yeah,
but you don't get any smoke then.
Well, no, you do because you close the lid. The smoke is still around. You still get that smoke, you know, especially if you're doing like crab cake or you're doing something of that nature. You do that plancha, you get it warm, put a little bit of oil, put your cake in there, close the lid, and you get a light smoke that's rotating through the dome of your Weber. So you still get a little bit. You don't get the brown char that you get from the flame being right there, but you do get that heat and you get that searing from that plancha, because that plancha is iron, cast iron. So when it's hot, it's hot.
So Pam has put together a whole list of things she would like to talk about on these grilled vegetables. And in the next segment, you're going to lead that discussion, Pam, because some of them are just like a no-brainer, like zucchini, grilled zucchini, grilled corn on the cob. But maybe there's some items that aren't typical on the grill that maybe we could talk about in the next one. Like you have down here, charred cabbage tossed with cucumber. Where the hell did that come from? Charred cabbage.
I was trying to honor your love of cabbage.
I do love cabbage, but tossed with cucumber?
Yeah.
Okay.
So you've got the char and then the brightness of the rice vinegar cucumber and to really liven it up.
You know, it sounds delicious when you say it that way. It just doesn't quite read that way.
Gotcha.
But we're going to talk about that when we come back. It's the second episode of Grilling to Perfection, Your Summer Produce on Cairo Radio, Hot Stove, 97.3 FM.
Cauliflower, you love cauliflower. We love cauliflower, 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 cauliflower.
Okay, here we are. We're grilling vegetables here this summer. There's so many out there. It's time to take advantage of the harvest. And Pam, you have some thoughts on vegetables that maybe aren't typically grilled, but you think would make good summer grilling. Like what? So tell us.
I want everybody to look this article up because it was from Epicurious, and the article came out on July 5th, and it's the 41 best vegetarian grilling recipes for everyone in the whole yard. And it's just, it's super inspirational. And the first one that really attracted me was whole cauliflower with miso mayonnaise. Because this year I fell in love with everything miso. And so it starts, this is an unusual twist because the cauliflower does need to be pre-steamed. I think a couple weeks ago we talked about onions, and I told you I usually blanch my onions before I put them on the grill because I'm afraid of it.
Which is like no more, right?
But I don't do it anymore.
Okay, good.
I was humiliated. But with cauliflower, to get this the kind of crispness, you really need to.
No.
But
no, you don't.
Absolutely not. Absolutely.
No. I'm just saying that's a style, but you don't need to.
Correct.
No.
You don't need to.
You can roast a whole head of cauliflower just like you can roast a turkey.
It would dry out like crazy.
No.
That's why you have the miso dressing for it.
Exactly.
Dork.
I think everything about this, the whole article was the treatment of the sauces and dressings.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it really takes the vegetables up to ethereal status.
Right. And I guess all we're saying, I think, Chef, not to speak for you, but all we're saying is don't believe everything that
Bon Appetit
tells
me.
No. That's one way to do it.
Right.
Okay.
And there's plenty of other ways. Just because it says steam at first doesn't mean you have to.
And if you're afraid that the whole head of cauliflower is going to dry out, cut it in half.
It's not going to dry out. It's 70% water.
I know. I know it's not going to dry out, but I'm saying if you want some help on that, you can cut it in half.
The miso dressing, is it? Do they brighten it with fresh herbs and vinegars? Because miso can be intense and heavy.
Right.
It's a vinegar-based hot sauce.
Okay.
In with the miso, soy, mayonnaise, a lot of fresh lemon juice, and scallion. So you make, you heat that dressing up. After you've steamed and then grilled your cauliflower and toss it.
You heat the mayonnaise? No.
Yeah, you warm the ingredients in the dressing.
Well, there you go.
You're right. Maybe Bon Appetit takes a completely different approach.
It's just a different approach.
Yeah.
What other ones piqued your interest?
Well, I knew this would appeal to Thierry, the eggplant with harissa.
Oh, yeah.
Come on.
I saw that.
That's brilliant.
That's a classic.
Is it?
Well, I mean, harissa and eggplant are both North African and Moroccan specifically dishes that you can have there. The eggplant is used tremendously, and they have those smaller eggplants that are super delicious.
And what do they do with them? Are they cooking them over a fire?
Yeah.
Okay.
Cook over fire and then
are they
sliced.
Putting a dark char on them at all?
Yeah. They have different style. They have the one where they cook whole, like the globe kind of idea where you cook it whole.
Or it's more baba ganoush.
Get the meat out.
Okay.
Once it's cooked, or they have the one where they're sliced and char, and you serve that into a salad. You can mix it with all kind of fresh herb. They use mint, cilantro, basil. Yeah, you've even seen basil. Parsley is big. And a little vinegar and harissa. And that's really delicious.
And is the harissa mixed with the herbs, or is it put on always just out of the jar?
It's usually served on the side.
On the side, yeah.
Yeah. So they have the dish, and then you eat that, and you just dunk into the harissa. And it's
so
really
good.
Delicious.
And Tom, for you, I thought the king trumpet mushrooms on grilled bread, and then making a pecorino-based salsa verde. Because then you could do your beautiful mixed big-leafed herbs against all that crunchy grill flavor.
Yeah, and mushrooms, like the trumpets, don't have a lot of their own flavor. So what the flavor they do have when you get done will be really good charcoal flavor to go with.
Smoky, yeah.
Yeah, to go with that pecorino. So pecorino is often very salty.
So salty.
Sheep's milk cheese.
That's why I
and
love
you
it.
Just have to be very careful of how you use it and not over salt with extra salt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But on a mushroom, that's a great contrast.
Perfectly fine, yeah. Perfectly good combo.
They didn't have any broccoli grilling, but you're the king of broccoli. What would you...
Well, we make it here all the time at our class here, the old Cantina Lena broccoli salad, the hard char. And that can happen on in a cast iron pan, or if you want it smoky, you just do it over that intense heat. I think sometimes we often talk about indirect cooking so much, but with vegetables, you really kind of want that intense side of the fire.
Right. And you just you can't really walk away. I mean, most vegetables, you have to stay there. It's not like, you know, like when I do my chicken, I walk away.
Mm-hmm.
But when you do direct heat and you do vegetable, you got to stay on top of it. So it's an easy rotation, and you get your nice char, and it cooks fairly fast. And if it's not completely cooked, just put on the side where there's heat but no flame, and it will finish cooking. So, again, this is easy to do for lettuces, cabbages. You know, we talk about all those leafy vegetables. It's very easy to do for that.
I bought ingredients for beet, burrata, and cherry combo.
Mm-hmm.
I've never done beets on the grill, but I think the method that you just talked about is going to be important to get
Are you talking beet, the vegetable, or beet green?
The vegetable, the root.
Okay, the root. Yeah,
you just put them on the roast. You roast them like you would anything, and then just rub off the charred skin, and then you've got a roasted beet. But I never, you know, that seems to have been, over the last 10 years, very popular, that beet and cherry combination.
Right.
I don't get it. They're both red.
It's not my,
they're both sweet.
Yeah, it's not my thing either. It's not, to me, I don't think there is a high contrast on, if you have a true earthy, sweet beet, and you have, you know, a Bing cherry, there's
is
a lot
that
of
dramatic enough, the difference?
Yeah, correct. But it's become a very popular combination. And, of course, with black pepper, it makes everything better. But
If you pickle one of the two.
Now, that would make it more interesting.
Either the beets or the cherry. Then that becomes...
That's a good idea. Pickle the
becomes
cherry.
A different
I don't want to miss out. You have sweet potatoes down. And I think that's an underutilized grilled vegetable.
I love sweet potatoes.
So how would you do them on the grill? I was thinking planks.
Yeah, like, for sure.
Planks is very good because
it
chars the most of it. Again, you're looking for putting on the grill to have some char and some flavor. So anything you're going to put on the grill whole is going to be on the outside, and most likely you're going to get rid of the skin because it's burned. So you don't want to do it like that. You want to slice it.
Ah, did you hear that? Here's chef right there.
Yeah.
You know, chef.
If it's
coal fired sweet potato. So you take a sweet potato, you bake it all the way, so it's a little soft and it's all done completely. Then you take that very same sweet potato and you literally put it in the coals and you char the crust of the sweet potatoes.
Mm.
It is so good. They're a revelation.
As a kid, we used to put those big potatoes into the ashes while the goat was running above.
Yeah, baby.
And the beans were in the clay pot. And you put those potatoes in, we call it ash potato.
Mm-hmm.
And you put them in there and you come back 2-3 hours later. And you have a nail, then you put into the potato when you start.
So the nail is to help run the heat through the center, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Man, those potatoes were the best.
And to give you lead poisoning.
With that, you know what? You got to die from something.
Exactly.
That's always what my mom says.
Let it be a sweet
potato.
My mom
always says, well, you got to die from something. I might as well be a good sweet potato.
With a lot of butter on it.
There's a lot of salted butter.
That spike running through the roof of your mouth might kill you.
Oh, did anybody say that? Remove the nail before you.
Remove the nail before you. Pinnacle of summer food coming up, salad niçoise. Yeah, and I look at this as being a farewell meal to our friend Pamela, because she loves a good salad niçoise. On Cairo Radio, it's the Hot Stove Society Show, 97.3 FM.
Your mother is so stupid that she goes to Barney's Rooftop Deck restaurant for lunch and orders a niçoise salad and calls it a niçoise salad.
I don't know if you mind, but would you like the sauce in the salad or the sauce on the side? The sauce in the salad or the sauce on the side? The sauce in the
Hey, it's the Hot Stove. We're back in the kitchen. We're having fun on Pamela's last day as our producer. We were wishing her well in her new job of the executive director of the Pike Place Market Senior Center and Food Bank. We'll go down there and see her sometime. Maybe we can cook something at the Senior Center. Would be yeah.
Oh,
sometime.
Brenda would love that.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
Yeah. Is Brenda your boss?
She's our kitchen manager.
Oh, okay.
She runs a tight
ship. She can be her boss. She's the boss.
Yeah. So, Pam, you had one meal to choose for your last meal on our show, and you chose, how do you say it, chef?
Salad niçoise.
What happened to the la?
La salade niçoise, if it was written down.
I can't believe I had to correct you.
I know. I can't believe you did either. No, it's la salade niçoise, yes. The niçoise salad.
Okay, so Pam, do you like a traditional salad when Terry and I make you your goodbye lunch?
Yes, and I was thinking about it because last weekend we went up to Hansville to Point No Point to visit the Dow family. And it was a big passel of adults and kids, so it had to be an easy plated lunch. And it was a combined effort of Peter on the grill with this gorgeous tuna, beautiful loins, and Peggy in the kitchen prepping all the vegetables. But they did the classic with the green beans, the hard-boiled egg, tuna, potato.
Roasted red tomato. Pepper, no doubt.
No, tomato.
Red pepper.
Tomato?
A little tomato. But it was it's just so visually satisfying.
So it's funny because you just called it a classic. And in the classic, it's only tomato and anchovies or tuna and hard-boiled egg and lettuce.
No potato?
There is no green beans, no potatoes in niçoise salad. Classic original. However, in the last 50 years, chefs have enhanced that in different places. And personally, I love green beans. I cannot do a niçoise without green beans. And olives.
Olives.
And tomatoes.
But niçoise is where it gets its name, right?
Yeah. Originally, there is no green beans and potatoes, which has been added to the salad niçoise over the period. But originally, there is none of that in the salad niçoise. It's just tuna or anchovies. Depends, because in Nice, they have both from the Mediterranean, and they get this. So those are the fish, the local fish originally. And as it came along, it was all confit and it was all in the can. So anchovies in the can or tuna in the can, and tomato and hard boiled egg, olives, green lettuce, and those were the components of the niçoise salad.
Well, how do you make it now?
I had haricot vert, I had potato. Those are the components that I add to my
So the classic.
Classic, yeah.
Yeah.
And I do a lemon olive oil dressing. Originally, I think it was just I don't remember what the original dressing of the niçoise was originally.
But I always made a mustard vinaigrette for it.
Yeah, I do mustard and lemon juice. That's what I do. And olive oil. That's my dressing for my niçoise.
So, Pam, do you like tin fish better or do you like the fresh tuna on the grill?
This was my favorite way to have it come fresh off the grill.
Fresh tuna off the grill.
But more commonly, I have made it with a high quality canned tuna. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we used to do that Lule. We used to do the fresh tuna too on the salad. This wasn't. I think if you can have fresh tuna, especially here, we have beautiful albacore, you know, very close by. If you can get your hand on a good fresh piece of tuna, it is definitely a good way to have an East West salad. I don't care if in the can is traditional. If you can get fresh, it's always good.
I like salmon, too. I do, too.
That's
popular
what I
to have a salmon niçoise.
Yeah, the opening of Cafe Sport. I don't know if you remember our niçoise salad that had the lavender little flowers in our dressing, in our mustard vinaigrette on the salmon niçoise. So.
Very much an homage.
My favorite is when people would come in and say, I'll have the niçoise salad, please.
Oh, my God.
The owner of the restaurant came in one day and said, I really like that salmon niçoise.
Did you use anchovy? That seems to be the very controversial element, and I think it's imperative.
It's not always in it, but like I said, in Nice, classically, it was either anchovies or tuna.
It's the protein. It's the
dressing.
Well, you could put some in the dressing, I guess, but I'm just saying the way you talked about it, the anchovy was instead of the tuna. It's like, you know, you have your choice.
I want both.
Which, by the way, brings me up to, since we're celebrating Pam's last day producing the show, the biggest fib I ever heard Pam say on this show. Speaking of canned tin fish.
You tell.
Wasn't it you who said you love to get up in the morning and have...
Oh, yes.
Herring on your canned herring on your avocado toast. Wasn't that you who said that? You have it every morning.
So just so you know, I went to spy on her. None of that.
None of
it's yogurt.
That you who said that?
It's yogurt, yeah. And cereal and none of this.
Yeah, she pulled that out one day. I about fell over.
We were both like,
I about fell over in my. And I don't even sit down. I just. It's sardines on avocado toast, and you have it every morning. Oh, my God. She doesn't even eat breakfast.
I know. Mike was horrified when he listened to that show. Okay. It was lunch.
Oh. Okay.
And with corn chips. Perfect.
Okay. That's moving forward.
Yeah.
But back to the anchovies. What I was thinking would be a nice touch is to make an anchovy dressing and just use it on the potatoes and the green beans.
Sure.
And everything else that's simple, either mustard vinaigrette or lemon oil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what you're saying when you say anchovy dressing. You know, the closest thing I can think of is like a Caesar salad dressing. But
yeah.
But I think of this particular salad as needing a somewhat light dressing. So a heavy kind of anchovy-y dressing doesn't mix for me with this particular salad. I don't know how you feel about beautiful, fragrant olive oil. You know,
That's originally the classic is originally light dressing. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, since then it got changed to some chefs have done red wine vinegar dressing, like vinaigrette, not dressing, but vinaigrette. So there's no binder. It's just olive oil and red wine vinegar, salt and pepper. That's been a common one to be used in if you go in countryside in bistros in France, if you order a salad niçoise, you will often get hard-boiled egg, your canned tuna or fresh tuna. It's rare to find fresh tuna. It's canned tuna, your olives, your lettuce is underneath, and the dressing will be like a red wine vinaigrette.
What do they do in the countryside of Ballard?
Probably put a, I don't know, put a seal as a side garnish. No, I'm not sure, but yeah. And fresh anchovies is very rare, but I've never had a salad and this was with fresh anchovies. So
that
I don't,
would be wonderful, though.
That would
be
great.
They don't last very long once they're caught.
Throw them on the grill the day of and then make a salad and this was with that, and that would be delicious. Now, if you go to Portugal, that is definitely something you can have because they have anchovies galore and sardines. You could have lunch.
Like I should
you could have
there.
Lunch there. You could have breakfast and lunch.
I think talking about vinaigrettes and dressings, though, I always think of Alice Waters because she was so adamant about keeping your dressings really light and. We got some beautiful butter lettuce at the farmers markets yesterday. So last night I just had this so delicate, the butter lettuce. And I restrained myself and just did lemon and a beautiful olive oil. You know, that Vignolta herb salt. Mic drop,
huh?
So good.
That's nice.
So good.
Yeah, some fresh herb. I mean, right now you get tons of beautiful fresh herb, either on the market or, I mean, in my backyard, I got, again, tarragon, basil, parsley, all those different oil herbs. You know, you grab a few leaves, you just chisel them and then put that into your dressing. And instantly, those render instantly, and you have wonderful flavor to add to your whatever you're doing, your protein, your vegetables, your salad, your greens. So it's a very easy thing to make go one level up, and it's easy to enhance that way.
So delicious. We had a nice little experience at the Ballard Farmers Market this last weekend where we were out on the road. We got there at about 8:45. They open at 9. We parked in the front row. We walked down. All the places were open already, but there was nobody there.
Wow.
We had a crepe. Like, we were the first person at the crepe stand, so we had a little crepe to kind of start the walk. And what an enjoyable experience that was compared to sometimes when you're there.
Oh.
And dog lovers are going to hate me for this, but, God, there's so many dogs there.
Please don't bring your dog to the market.
Yeah, I don't know what to say about that. Maybe I'm just not a dog person, but with the humanity and everything going on, it seems like there's a lot of dogs there.
And strollers.
And, well, yeah. Strollers, I think you have to expose your kids to
that.
Did
you see the new raclette stand? Some cute young kids are doing raclette there.
Really?
No, I did not.
Yeah.
I would have taken it.
Raclette? I know. That's what I had for breakfast.
Up next, it's Rub With Love, Food for Thought, Tasty Trivia, right here on the Hot Stove Society Show, 97.3 FM.
What do you do with tossed salads and scrambled eggs? A world full of circles and those square pegs. The blues is always calling tossed salads and scrambled eggs.
I used to eat tacos every single day. But then I had a pizza slice and it blew me away.
All right, it's time for the Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge right here on the Hot Stove. Brought to you by Rub With Love Spice Rubs, a line of rubs and sauces that will open up your options for creating new flavors and new flavor profiles. You can purchase Rub With Love locally at PCC Markets, Town and Country Markets, Fresh Fish and Ballard. I know they have our fish taco rub. I love our fish taco rub. Pacific Northwest Shop in Tacoma and Seattle, or visit us at SeaTown, Sirius Pie Ballard here at the Hot Stove, or online, or wherever you like to shop. Generally,
anywhere in this country.
Yeah, we have the number one selling salmon rub in the world. If you haven't tried it, you're not cool. That's all there is to it.
You're just not cool. Put a fine point on it.
Pamela, how do we play this game? And tell us who's going to win your last trivia challenge.
Jim and Margaret!
Thanks for that.
Now we announce, I love how we announce the winner before we play.
Oh, that's right. We haven't played. Each of the contestants is getting 5 questions. They're kind today. They're soft.
Really?
Fruit and vegetable themed.
So if we get them wrong, we're really going to feel bad about ourselves.
No, we're really going to feel the pain.
Yeah.
All right, I start. Go right ahead, Pam.
We're going to start with a multiple choice.
Do Jim and Margaret get a gift shop in our shop? Gift shop? To shop in our gift shop?
Yeah. They're going to just want veggie rub.
Oh, okay.
The natural fiber, I always said qua, but I think it's coir, used for rugs and upholstery padding, is from what fruit? You know, it's is it kiwi, coconut, or persimmon?
Oh, coconut all the way.
Exactly. Number 2. What kind of fruit is a Grenache?
It's a grape.
You are off to such a strong and stunning start today, Chef in the Hat. Savoy is a famous type of which vegetable?
It's an hotel in London. Very famous.
Very famous.
It's a cabbage.
It's a cabbage. And true or false, a pineapple is a type of berry?
False.
It's true. Pineapples are not a single fruit, but a group of berries that have fused together.
Yeah, that's true. I knew that, too.
New knowledge. I did not know this.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know this.
But it's from the Plumeriad family, right? What do you call it?
The pineapple family?
No, it's from
the
a flower.
Orchid fairy?
Yeah,
bromelade.
I think so.
Bromelade.
Bromelade.
Thank you. Oh, see, Margaret, oh, we got the right.
I got the right question because she would have won.
Give him a lifeline. And finally, what sort of fruit is a kumquat? What family is it in?
Citrus.
Drill down a little.
Okay, it's kumquat is a cut between, if I had to call it, between a lemon and a tangerine.
It's an orange.
I said orange.
Okay.
Said
orange. 4 out of 5.
4 out of 5. Oh, my God.
Yes.
What a start.
Jim and Margaret, multiple choice to start.
And the only choice is 5 out of 5.
Tiny Tim is a variety of which fruit? An orange, a tomato, or a plum?
I think it's a tomato.
You are correct. You are right.
Tomato? I thought it was a plum.
Tiny Tim's a tomato. Which part of the celery do we often eat? Do you want a multiple choice or?
We eat the stem, but correct. We also eat the seed as
bonus seasoning. Points.
Six out of five.
Six out of five. I'm glad Jim brought you today for many reasons. True or false, kohlrabi is part of the mustard family.
No, you got it.
Come on, no dead air.
I don't.
It's only true or false. It's 50% chance.
No, it's part of the cabbage family.
True.
It's true. Jim nailed it. And four, kale is a variety of which vegetable family?
The mustard family.
You got this one, Jim.
We only have a 2-hour show.
We need multiple choice.
Oh, wow.
Is kale? It?
Is this how we play?
Is it the kale, the cabbage, or the kale family?
Right.
Cabbage.
Cabbage.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Beautiful.
4 out of 4. And finally, Alberta is a variety of which fruit?
Talked That's about. A peach.
It's a peach.
Oh, 6 out of 5.
6 out of 5. Beautiful. Wow.
Tom?
Douglas, what kind of fruit is a morello?
It's a cherry.
It's a cherry. And which of the following fruits is not part of the rose family? Avocados, cherries, apricots.
Both avocados and cherries have pits in them. So does the avocado. I would say the cherry.
Avocados.
Avocados.
Mm-hmm. Watercress belongs to which family?
The people of all earth, the family earth. You can find it in every little drainage ditch and sidewalk in the world.
I love harvesting it on little creeks.
Yeah.
It is part of the mustard family.
Yeah, see what I said.
And
mustard is part of the world.
Number 4, what kind of vegetable is a chantenay? Am I saying it correctly? Chantenay.
It's a fabulous ale made by the vegetable abbey of France.
It is a very desirable carrot variety.
Mm, absolutely. I love them.
And which gas is produced by most fruits, this is multiple choice, when they start to ripen? Methane, acetylene, or ethylene?
Depends if you've eaten them or not. If you've eaten them, it's methane.
If they ripen inside of you, that's definitely methane.
On the counter, which one would it be?
Oh, I have no idea.
Ethylene.
Ethylene.
How do you do?
You did great. 1 out of 6.
Wow.
Well, thank you for Jim and Margaret to come be our guest here at the show and to kick my butt. If you want to be part of the show like Jim and Margaret, you can join the community on YouTube Live at Tom Douglas & Co., or buy a ticket to join us in the studio at HotStoveSociety.com. The show is produced by Pamela Hinckley for the very final time. We hope she comes back as a guest producer at some point. Sean McFadden is our technical director, and our talented editor at Cairo is Sean, don't call me Del Torre. Also, remember, if you miss any episode of Hot Stove Society show in Cairo, you can listen via podcast. Just subscribe with your favorite podcast app.
Thanks for listening. Thank you, Pamela, and au revoir.
Au revoir.